Hello?
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 You pod.
To win the game. That's the great thing about sports.
You pod to win the game.
All right, welcome to Pod to Win the Game. I am Charles Robinson, senior NFL writer for Yahoo Sports. He is Frank Schwab, senior writer for Yahoo Sports. And let me tell you something about Frank. When he bets on a player and loses, man, he really, really, really loses. The worst thing other than the broken ankle to happen to Trey Lance was probably Frank Schwab, who touted him as an MVP candidate before the season started. Frank.
Are you saying that he can't win MVP? Like what?
Yeah,
he can't, you're not going to come back and
be tougher
because his ankle was pointed the wrong direction from his body.
Be pretty, yeah. Awful.
By the way, I do love the reports, like people tweeting, like it looks like it, like hours later, like it could be a serious ankle injury. Well, yeah, what tipped you off? Like the fact that his foot was facing 90 degrees the other way? Yeah, that probably was it.
Like I didn't understand it was like Twitter kind of watching it all unfold in the ecosystem. And then like hours later, people were like, well, yeah, he's out, you know, oh yeah, he's probably out. I'm like, he went off in an air cast. I don't know a situation where I've seen a player whose ankle, which we could see if you saw it. I mean, even though the sock was over it, you could see it looked like it was fully dislocated. I don't know a player going off in an air cast after we saw something.
Paul
like
that. Pierce was the only one, I think. Paul Pierce with that horrible injury that he suffered and was back like 5 minutes later. Yeah. I mean, we're making fun, but
this is a real injury. I mean, yeah,
it was like, oh, this is bad. And you just wonder, like, I know we're going to get into kind of the micro, but the macro, like, I mean, how far does this set Trey Lance's career back? I mean,
it's
no
a,
first
a
year,
deal.
Whole second year. I mean, other than a monsoon game last week, a whole second year is lost. And now you get into year three and we're going to know nothing about him. And who knows what Jimmy does the rest of the season. And who knows? It took Dak really a year to kind of regain his form after his really bad leg injury. They didn't call a lot of runs for him, you know, his first year back. Are they going to have to do the same with Trey Lance? Are they going to even trust him to start? There's so many complicating factors here. I just feel terrible for the kid because, you know, he is an exciting player. He is a fun player. I did think he was going to have a big season, and now it's all gone. And, you know, I mean, he's got to just feel like, wow, this was absolutely the worst thing that could have possibly happened for his career right now.
He played one game in college in 2020, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Then he played very sparingly in 2021. Basically, it was a scratch.
Two starts,
but it was a scratch season. Like we I think we can agree that
agreed.
They wanted him to win the job. He didn't win the job, and you have to feel like in terms of meaningful football, 2021, a lot of it was sitting and taking notes and you know whatever. It just was not the meaningful football he wanted. Now in 2022, you're going another year with very little meaningful football and an injury. And so, yeah, you have 3 years.
At least last year he's practicing. You know, I mean, like
true.
I mean, you know how it is with injured guys. Injured guys are just out of sight, out of mind. You're not really involved with anything. You're kind of just you're floating. I mean, so he doesn't even get. It's really, this is true. Like last year wasn't a lost season. I think this year is just lost because the injury, all the rehab that goes with it, you kind of just get lost in a shuffle because, hey, these guys got to move on with their season. Yeah, if you think, like you said, I mean, it's a great point. Since the beginning of COVID, this guy's played 4 football games, basically. You think about how long that's been. Like, I mean, it's been a long time since Trey Lance has played a lot of football. And, you know, we're going to come in next year and have absolutely no idea what he is as a player, who he is, where he's going to be. It's sad. It really stinks for him.
The thing is, too, and again, we will get into the micro, but I mean, even when you look at the macro, right, the macro of it, the totality of high-level football that Trey Lance has played, and I'm talking about beyond the NFL, I consider college and the NFL, that's high-level football.
Sure.
Okay. He's played 1 year. He's played 1 year of high level football in his life. Okay. 2018, he wasn't a starter. Okay. For North Dakota State. 2019, he became the starter, lit it up, became that player that was going to be a first round pick in the NFL. 2020, as you said, COVID, plays one game. 2021, he has 2 starts, but, you know, again, other than practice, it was not the on field competition. Right. meaningful that shapes you on Sundays, you become a leader, all those different things, right? 2022, same deal. Now he's not even in practice, and now he's got an ankle injury. So the simple fact is, in all of Trey Lance's life, he's played 1 year of meaningful football at the college and professional level, going back to 2018. And next year will be 2023. We do not know at all what ultimately is going to happen with this guy. And I'll tell you, I wrote about him. And what I ended up writing was more from the vantage point of Jimmy Garoppolo. And we'll get to that in a second. But if I'm being brutally honest here, and I pulled back on this feeling because I immediately recognized how unfair it was. But if I'm being brutally honest about what I thought once I saw Jimmy step in and watch the remainder of that game, which, by the way, the 49ers beat the Seahawks 27-7. When I watched Jimmy in that game, I saw consistency and I had a lingering feeling of, I don't want to say lingering, I had a creeping feeling of this team got better and it sucks. Like I don't mean that in like a callous asshole kind of way. And I know it comes off that way. What I mean though is from a consistency standpoint, from someone who we know has played a lot of high level football, been to a Super Bowl, been a team captain, been a player that has been paid and veterans rally around. And oh, by the way, the Super Bowl window that the 49ers clearly have with just some above average quarterback play in 2022, I felt like the 49ers got a little bit better with Jimmy Garoppolo stepping back in that role. Now, the reason I pulled back on it, and I'm sure Brett will clip this and make me look like a total douchebag anyway, but I'm going to go ahead and give the pod listeners the part that Brett won't clip so that I do look like a douchebag. But the reason I pulled back on it was because it wasn't totally fair. It wasn't totally fair to Trey Lance, because the simple truth is Trey Lance didn't get enough of an opportunity to show us how much he could develop over the course of a season. And there is a chance that from September to January, he could have made big strides that would have surprised us, made us realize this is why they drafted him, invested all this capital. He didn't get that opportunity. So I don't know for sure that the 49ers necessarily became a wholesale better team just because they get some consistency back out of Jimmy Garoppolo. What do you think?
Yeah, and I get exactly where you're coming from. And I think the key word there is consistency, in that the 49ers know exactly what Jimmy is. They didn't know what Trey Lance was. And Trey Lance was still kind of a, I don't want to say a random player, but he is a little bit. I mean, look, when Jimmy Garoppolo is in there, Kyle Shanahan knows, if I call play X, play X is getting run exactly how I drew play X up. With Trey Lance in there, there's a lot of freelancing, no pun intended there. He's still learning how to operate an NFL offense. And even freelancing is not that bad. Russell Wilson's made a Hall of Fame career out of it. I mean, you can be a heck of a player doing that. And Trey Lance brought physical gifts to the table that Jimmy just doesn't have. There's just throws that Trey Lance would make where you're like, okay, Jimmy can't do that. Like, and you could run a different offense with him. But as far as just what we expect from the 49ers when they take the field next Sunday night against the Broncos, I believe, we know exactly what we're getting out of them. And I think from that aspect, you're right. And in that, I think the ceiling is lowered. I do believe that as I sit here today, because I don't take anything out of week one for Trey Lance. That game was ridiculous. That weather was so stupid. Like, Justin Fields completed 8 passes in that game. Okay. Like, he wasn't great either. Like, that was just a weird game. I gave him a total pass. We didn't even see. It was the first quarter when he got hurt this week. I really, truly believe, as I sit here, that the ceiling was higher for the 49ers with Trey Lance. But the floor was lower. Like, there's no doubt about that. We know what we're getting out of the 49ers now, which is a playoff contender, a team that if every single thing lines up, you can make a really deep playoff run, as they've done a couple times with him. There's a reason they've won a lot of games with him, and that's because they know exactly what they're getting. They know he can run that offense. They know he's very reliable. And I mean, he's, and I hate to use the term because it's a negative, but game manager. You know what you're getting out of Jimmy Garoppolo. You could win. The San Francisco 49ers can't win games with him, whereas Trey Lance was going to be more of a roller coaster. There's no doubt about that. Even my pie in the sky idea of what Trey Lance could be this season, I knew there was going to be some dips in the road where Jimmy is kind of just, okay, he's reliable. He's that old comfortable sweater. You know, I mean, you know exactly what Jimmy Garoppolo is as a quarterback.
Okay, but let me throw this at you. This is my thought process here. This is a new landscape for Jimmy Garoppolo in terms of we're going to see something here we haven't seen before. We're going to see a veteran player who took a team to a Super Bowl, got paid, all those things that I talked about before, took the team to the doorstep of a Super Bowl last year and lost to the team that ultimately won the Super Bowl. And by the way, they were leading that team in that doorstep game.
Oh, Jaquiski Tartt catches that pass. Jimmy Garoppolo has got two Super Bowls in the last
two Super
seasons.
Bowls. Yeah. And he got to experience the team after all last season, Trey Lance not winning the job. He got to experience the team saying, you, that's how it works. That's, you know, it's not a meritocracy in the NFL like we always say it is. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we invest picks. We invest in the future, the ceiling, hoping we get there. And that means we sell out, you know, something that was reliable, but we're trying to upgrade to a sports car. You're just a sedan, bro.
Yeah.
And so he got to experience that. We don't know how he's going to respond to that. Number one, I'm curious to see maybe if Jimmy Garoppolo has a little bit more of a chip. He came from New England. And when you talk to people in New England about him and Brady and then like Belichick really liking Jimmy, the guys in New England who didn't really like Jimmy, you know, that were always sort of dismissive about this idea that he could have replaced Tom. What they would tell you is he's not a mother. He's just not. Tom is. That's who Tom is. Sunday was a Tom moment.
Yeah, we saw that.
We saw him be that asshole, right?
And
that's just not Jimmy. Well, he's got a chance to be one after this, after seeing a team try to fire him. And then number two, the other thing, I'm curious to see how the team itself rallies around him now that they kind of were like, all right, well, we've seen what it was going to be like with the young guy. And, you know, it's going to be some up and down. There was going to be some inconsistency. There's going to be some, well, maybe the team rallies around Jimmy in a way that they were never given the opportunity, but now they are, that, hey, you do have this guy. It is his last ride. He came back. He redid his deal. He ate the sandwich by cutting his salary. And maybe we're going to play up for this guy as much as we possibly can. I'm curious just to sort of see how it, and oh, by the way, in an NFC that if we've learned anything the first 2 weeks, it's as wide open we thought it was.
I mean, just honestly, Charles, just take a step back and think about the story. If I would have told you February 15th, whenever day you want to pick, that on September 24th, 25th, whatever it's going to be, Jimmy Garoppolo is going to be the starting quarterback for the San Francisco 49ers. You would say, what in the world are you talking about? There is no chance of that. Zero. What? Just leave because you're nuts right now.
Right.
What a story. What a story if they – what did they do in the NFC West? Because the Rams haven't blown anybody away, but we'll talk about them in a little bit. What if they – I mean, this would be such a crazy story of a guy who, like you said, he had a teary, like, farewell press conference after the season was done. He thanked the media there. He's like, thanks, guys, for covering me. You guys were always great. I appreciated it all. And here he is in mid-September starting the rest of the season, presumably if he stays healthy, for the San Francisco 49ers. It's just a cool story. It's fun. He's always – throughout this whole process, he's handled himself with the ultimate class and professionalism. And nobody wanted to see Trey Lance get hurt, but it is a – on the other flip side of it, just see this Jimmy G story kind of unfold and where it could go. It could be a guy who literally anybody in the league could have traded for this guy. And even Kyle has said, DC has made a mistake. I mean, he's kind of being a little passive aggressive or whatever, but he, you know, he's like, all these teams made a mistake. And, you know, here we are with Jimmy still. And that's great. And now for that to maybe lead to a playoff berth for the San Francisco 49ers or Jimmy Garoppolo is starting. It's just, it is really, really, just a crazy story that nobody saw coming 7 months ago. No, absolutely nobody.
Yeah. No. And now the fun part of it for Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch is there's really two sides of that blade. If they succeed and do well with Jimmy, who knows? Like what if they put it together and they make a run?
And they could.
There's a downside to that narrative though for Kyle and John, because then people go, what the f-? What did you do? Maybe your analysis and your assessment of what you already had was not as on the mark. Maybe your thinking is not quite as state of the art as we thought. And he's already experiencing a microcosm of that because people are asking him why he ran Trey Lance on what was it, 2nd and 8? Like why'd you run him in that position? Why didn't you just, you know, and you know, Kyle got chippy and pissed off and was like, hey, there were multiple options off that, yada yada yada. And, you know, I get where Kyle's coming from. He's like, this is part of the kid's game. This is part of what we brought him in. Like, it's what we're going to do. But, yeah, there's two sides of this. And when I wrote about it, one of the things I brought up was I remember totally different player, different situation. But I do remember the satisfaction of Drew Brees when A.J. Smith, the general manager of the then San Diego Chargers, drafted Phillip Rivers. And then Brees put his ass on the bench for 2 years, which never happens with a top 10 pick quarterback.
He's the last one, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and Brees just straight up stuck it to him. He was a Pro Bowl level player Rivers' first year. He was a damn good player Rivers' second year. And, you know, he hurt his shoulder. Easier for the team to move on. But, you know, if you can get Drew Brees away from a microphone to go back and revisit those days and how happy he was to basically stick a middle finger up at A.J. Smith and be like, "F you." Well, guess what? I think Jimmy's got a little bit of that opportunity here.
He does.
There's no question.
Absolutely. Let's swing it to the next game, because this game, I mean, you're talking about entertaining regular season games. My goodness. The Miami Dolphins, 42, Baltimore Ravens, 39. What a game. And I'll just start by saying this. At one point in the fourth quarter, Lamar Jackson had a perfect passer rating, 118 yards rushing, and he was a losing quarterback. That's because Tua Tagovailoa just went nuclear in this game. And it was like, everything that's been said about Tua, I mean, kind of melted away in this game. He's hitting long passes to Tyreek. He brought his team back from 21 down. He was that dude. The first time in the NFL that we could say Tua was that dude who was supposed to be the number one pick, who, you know, I mean, struggled through his first 2 years, but we thought that, you know, I mean, anybody who was holding on to that, you know, Tua could be a great player. It manifested itself today. 469 and 6 touchdowns. Like, I mean, unbelievable. Just an unbelievable performance by Tua. Unbelievable by Tyreek Hill. Unbelievable by Jalen Waddle. Just a great, great NFL football game.
Frank, I'm telling you, when I remember going through the draft process with guys on teams and asking them about Tua and them saying how it's so hard to, you know, really look at his film and walk away with a proper assessment because he's throwing to wide receivers who have 5 and 10 yard windows. Absolutely. They're wide open. Mm-hmm. Well, guess what? Now they have two guys who can get open in the NFL by 5 yards, which might as well be 10 yards in the NFL. If you're open by 5 yards in the NFL, you are way open. Well, guess what? Hill and Waddle are those guys. And if they play, they also played out of their minds. And if they play like that, Tua's going to have a lot of success. Gesicki, the touchdown pass that Gesicki catches, was ridiculous. He high-pointed the hell out of that ball, which, great, if they can work him into the offense. But I'll tell you, I just think nerdy-ass Mike McDaniel, okay, that people clown him because he's a man, he looks like he's like 15, wears the glasses, and he's just like, he looks like a little hipster guy. Beat Bill Belichick.
Yeah, Bill Belichick.
Okay.
John Harbaugh,
beat the brakes out of Bill Belichick. Just beat John Harbaugh in a horse race.
Yeah.
And if you're Miami, I feel good. I honestly feel good for Miami fans because it's been a wild, crazy mess there with Flo and Ross and the Tom Brady stuff. And, you know, you had the Tua stands that were crazy Tua stands. They finally get their flowers, at least for one day.
For one, yep. Mm-hmm.
He did. He looked. I can't take anything away from him. He looked. He hit the guys open. He hit some nice passes where guys weren't necessarily open. The Gesicki pass, I mean, was a kind of had to put it where he put it, and that was the only guy who was going to get it. It was just a hell of a game, and I hope that this is real. That what we're seeing is real, because there'll be a lot of fun to watch, and also, not having to replace that guy. If he can be 85% of what he was on Sunday, they'll never have to replace him, which is great for them moving forward, and it'll soften the blow of losing the draft pick they lost with the tampering stuff. But it was fun to watch, and man, Baltimore.
Oh, it's bad. It's a bad, bad loss for them. I mean, you can't give up 42 at home. You can't blow a 21-point lead.
No.
Real quick, before we move on from Miami, I wrote for Winners and Losers to lead it off. just the brilliance of the Tyreek Hill trade. And I was critical of it when it happened. I said, I don't think Tyreek's skill set matches up with Tua. I don't think that they're getting,
it seemed like a
Dolphins move where it's like, who's the biggest, splashiest guy we can get? Oh, Tyreek Hill. Sure. We'll figure it out later. Cause none of these moves work for the Dolphins, right? They always win the offseason and it really matters. But I think the brilliance of the Tyreek Hill trade was, yes, we're paying a fortune for this guy, but we're going to figure out Tua. And we talked about that. And you especially said you put it in a position where all of a sudden either Tua's the guy and you figure it out, or you still have Tyreek Hill and you're going to be a very attractive destination for somebody. But getting Tyreek Hill, a guy who completely changes your offense. There aren't many guys in the NFL other than quarterbacks who can completely change a team. Tyreek really is one of those guys because he's just so fast. He's just, it's weird. He's so much faster than everybody. He makes NFL defenders look slow, and not many guys can do that. I've ever been able to do that. Tyreek makes those guys look slow. He changes your whole offense. He opens things up for Jalen Waddle. Even Gesicki kind of reemerged today a little bit. All these guys, because defenses have to worry about Tyreek every single play because he could just take the top off. And you saw today about it, just how much that helps Tua, not just to have Tyreek to throw to, but to have that guy who defenses are rotating coverages to, opening things up. It was a perfect trade for them. Who knows? I mean, we're only two games into this thing. But as I sit here today, phenomenal trade. They did it. They saw something I didn't see with it.
I have a sneaky suspicion, too, and maybe, you know, Kansas City fans who listen to this podcast will be interested in this. I have a sneaky suspicion that Tyreek Hill is getting the one thing he absolutely unequivocally wanted in this move. And that was to just be overfed in the offense. He's got 25 targets in two games.
25 already, wow.
25 in two games. And part of me wonders if he didn't look at Cooper Kupp last year and say, God, like that guy, like it doesn't matter. Like they are pumping that him 10, 12, 15 times a game. And some of the comments that he made post-trade, which I kind of took exception to, you know, I thought it got fed adequately in Kansas City. But I'll tell you what, if he's averaging 25 every two games in Miami, then I'm going to be like, oh, okay, well, if that's what you wanted, okay.
You want 220 targets this season, cool. But and I also think that, and I don't know how much, you know, where this was on his priority list, but he gets to show a totally new part of his game now. He's no longer the guy who was just, oh, yeah, he played with Patrick Mahomes, one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time.
Oh, no.
Now he's, he's gone and he's balling with Tua. Okay. Yeah. Now we look at him in a totally different way.
That is such a good point because, man, I'm telling you right now, if he's the same dude with Tua,
I know.
Then I'm like, oh, man. Like,
Mahomes. Like, Mahomes is awesome. Like,
no,
Mahomes
not at
is,
all.
Of course, awesome with or without Tyreek, but Tyreek can paint a whole new legacy, like a whole new legacy for himself, and maybe make a Hall of Fame case at some point. Like, I mean, he's that good of a player, and he's not showing any signs of slowing down. And I mean, before we move off, the Dolphins, can they compete with the Bills? Can they? I think the Bills are the superior team, but man, these are two good wins for the Dolphins, who all of a sudden look like a totally new team.
Yeah, I'm going to keep going back to, if you get Waddle and you get Hill playing like this, who knows? You know, I mean, realistically, who knows?
Dangerous.
All right, swing it to the next one. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Hey, look, Tom Brady ain't got a great record against the Saints. Like, he's had some struggles against the Saints, so not the best game in the world. But they beat the Saints 20-10. Not the best game in the world for Tom Brady. He definitely, it wasn't a great game for him. Yeah. Both from an optics standpoint, because it gives the crowd who loves to just crap on him. He's yelling and, oh, we're going to play the what if somebody else not named Tom Brady did this? How would we treat them? Yeah. Yada, yada, yada. We're going to play that game over and over again. And then, oh, he called Marshawn Lattimore a like, you literally saw the word come out of his mouth. I saw it twice, which is why Lattimore, steps to him. And look, I'll say this for Mike Evans. And, you know, some people were kind of ripping Brady because they're like, oh, look, he didn't even finish the fight. I'll ride with Mike Evans, man. Because, like, when they showed that clip later where he was talking to the refs and he said, it's Tom Brady. What was I going to do? Like, I'm like, yep, that's my guy. Like straight up, right. You're on my squad. Yep. Like, that's who I want.
I agree. Yeah.
I'm looking forward to the rematch. Ooh, because this is
him and Lattimore, man. Evans and Lattimore is like the
good Lord.
That is the like one-on-one rivalry. And not, I mean, they play each other hard. And now Evans, is it possible Evans gets suspended again? Like he got suspended the one time. Remember when he blindsided Lattimore?
Yeah. Listen,
this isn't much different. I don't know.
I should have mentioned, by the way, I'm sorry. I'm talking to you like you and I are just talking, but I got to, for everybody who's listening to the podcast who didn't watch the game, basically what happened was Tom started jaw jacking with some members of the defense. He was pissed off about, you know, I think he felt like there was some pass interference, whatever. Tom's upset. He starts jaw jacking with some guys. He, like I said, he called Lattimore a and
you so just like next thing, that. You just wanted to reset that.
I mean, it was because it was like, I was like, man, what are you doing? Like, you get your clock cleaned, okay? Yeah, right. You are a 45-year-old man, okay? Like, man, yeah. I don't know, the TB12 method, there's something taking a fist to the face that probably changes the dynamic of your plan. But anyway, so in the midst of Tom going back and forth, Mike Evans came out of nowhere and just smacked the hell out of Marshawn Lattimore, put him on the ground, started a big fight, triggered a big fight.
Jeez, bro. By the way, I wonder what was Bruce Arians doing on the sideline getting involved with that? Like, that was like the weirdest cameo in that brawl. It was like,
I mean,
Bruce is talking trash to Marshawn Lattimore also? Like, what? What's going on?
I mean, especially not being the head coach and just being in this weird, ambiguous. Yeah. Weird, like, ambiguous hey, position
that's
now.
Bruce Arians. Can say what?
Yeah. Oh, he can say whatever he wants now. He can be involved in whatever
fly,
he
wants.
But anyway, look, it's. I didn't think it was. I thought it was a poor game for Tom. I think the Buccaneers clearly they need Godwin on the field
And Donovan Smith and Julio Jones they're thin.
A lot of guys out.
Yeah.
I would, if I was him, look, I keep thinking like if there's any shot Gronk's coming back, he better start making that call right now. Like, he better. Yeah. I mean, because they need whoever they can get back on the squad. I refuse to believe now we're starting to hear about Tom has dedicated himself to taking a personal day every single week. The reporting about his marriage is going full force now. Everybody's on it. Page Six is on it. People's on it. Every tabloid's on it. The British tabloids, I've seen stuff writing on it. I mean, like, everybody's on this now. He is an international story with whether or not he and Giselle are going to remain married, whether they're living together, all these different things. That's going to weigh on him. I'm curious to see how that plays out. But I will say this real quick about the Saints. Jameis is Jameis. I mean, like, it's...
Yeah.
Like, this is it, right? Like, this is, okay, we know enough. Jameis is, they're going to play it out the string with him. It's definitely, I know it's early in the season, but he's doing the same things he's done every single year where he's gotten a chance to open it up. It's the same guy over and over. It's not a small sample size here. They tried to address it this offseason by going after Deshaun Watson. Fully expect they're going to throw everything at getting a different quarterback in there for 2020.
You'd think. And I mean, Devin White, I think it was, said something to the effect of, we know Jameis. We knew he was going to throw it to us. And everybody made a big deal about it, but it's like, well, yeah, that's true. Everybody knows. And Jameis kind of became Jameis in this game. And I will say this before we move on. I just want to say this about the Buccaneers. When we start to do like the transitive property, right? You look back at that week one game and the Buccaneers defense, they shut down the Cowboys. We're like, oh my goodness, the Cowboys are terrible. Well, the Cowboys looked okay today, right? Like they, and now you look at, they called them 7 points, I believe. And now today against that Saints team that they put up some points, at least in the fourth quarter against the Falcons, they really held them to 3 points. Michael Thomas got a garbage touchdown at the end. Who cares? So the Buccaneers, if the offense can get healthy, and if the offense gets healthy, they'll be fine, I assume. The defense is top of the line. Yeah. I mean, this
secondary
defense
looks really nice.
Yes.
Secondary, really,
Antoine Winfield's a heck of a football player. My goodness. And you just look and you start to say, all right, you know, this Buccaneers defense basically has given up 10 points in two games to the Cowboys and the Saints, who aren't incompetent on offense by any means. So the one takeaway I had, other than, the offense struggle in the fight was whatever. The Buccaneers defense is really, really good. And I can't wait to see them next week against the Packers. It's going to be a really, really fun game. Let's swing it around to Lions Commanders. Lions win 36-27. And the Lions honestly just kind of pounded them. And Carson Wentz's final stat line looked okay. But it was a terrible first half. Maybe I'd be too hard on Carson Wentz. But they were down 22-0 and he looked terrible. He just looked like, you talk about a guy reverting to his old self. Carson Wentz became Carson Wentz in the first half. And they couldn't overcome that. And what do we make of the Lions now? I mean, two games, but they're averaging 35.5 points a game. Like, is this for real? Like, are the Lions good offense? Like, are they going to be like a top 10 offense this year? Like, it really does look pretty good. Amon-Ra St. Brown is awesome. DeAndre Swift looks like one of the best backs in the league. They look really good.
One of the things I definitely like about their roster when I look at it now, Amon-Ra St. Brown, I don't know how the hell he was a fourth round pick. Like, that's crazy. I mean, and he was good last year too. So
very good. Yeah.
And I love that he's cocky, by the way. The fact that he can name every single receiver draft ahead of him. I don't know why. I know it's all cliche and, you know, whatever. We hear that before, but I just like it when guys are like that. But Aiden Hutchinson, okay. But he had 3 sacks in the first half. And you're like, okay, all right, that's the guy, you know, that we and if you watch him, like, in particular, what I like about him is he has like effort stuff, you know. It's not like, oh, yeah, alignment tripped or something screwed up. Like, he's at times played himself out of a play and then brought himself right back into it. He chases relentlessly. Like, that's great. Like, that's awesome. So he looks to be what they thought they were getting. As you said, they have DeAndre Swift, who looks really, really good. I really like the 1-2 punch between him and Williams in the backfield. Yeah. Jameson Williams is coming, right?
Right. I mean,
that's what you're waiting for.
If he's healthy.
Their line, Penei Sewell.
Yeah, oh, their line has been awesome. Their really line has good. Been really, really good. And Jared Goff is kind of back in that 2019 Rams territory where he's like, he's got a lot around him. That's all I'm saying. Like, he could play well when the situation's right. He could play. We've seen him play a really good Pro Bowl season. I'm not saying he's going to Pro Bowl again, but if everything around him is set up well, he can put up a good season. And he had 4 touchdowns today. Like, he's got a lot of talent to work with around him. Now they play at the Vikings next week, I believe. Okay, let's see. You're going to have to slow down the Vikings too. The defense has been bad. Like, the defense
has been bad.
Like, I mean, they had one good half basically, and then, you know, they almost let the Commanders back in this game. So we'll see, but it's kind of fun. Like, the Lions are like the Lions are going to be a fun team to watch. Like, Thanksgiving won't be ruined by Detroit again. Like, this is great. Like, I'm all aboard this. I'm really excited to watch the Lions. Frank, they're a fun team.
If they're a 500 team this year, or even slightly below 500, that's a pretty sizable step forward for them.
Absolutely.
People are going to be really happy about that. Now all you got to do is retain the talent, you know, and you're going to have to clear some guys you're going to have to pay moving forward. But I mean, like, you know, it's. Yeah, there's definitely a chance that they take a really, you know, they're not a playoff team, but they take a good step forward this year. And I still see with the quarterback, I don't know. I guess I have PTSD from Jared Goff last year with the Rams. God, this next one.
Oh, my goodness. Let's go. Yeah, this one, right. Oh, my goodness, Charles.
Okay. Denver Broncos won, by the way. They won. They won this game at home. They won 16-9 in a
so
game
bad.
That does not feel like they won.
No.
Because now I'm going to let you go ahead and unleash here. I am not going to be on the level you are, and I will tell you why. But go ahead. And by the way, Nathaniel Hackett, the head coach, deserves the criticism that he's getting. Okay. But especially Frank's going to unload on him for game management and some play calling. This is what the job requires. When you do this stuff, you deserve to get criticized. Everybody out there, it's any other coach who did this would have gotten absolutely destroyed for it. Go ahead.
Yeah. And obviously, for those who don't know, I'm based in Colorado. So all week I've just been hearing about Nathaniel Hackett stinks. Like, people are already upset about
going into this game.
I mean, he tried to 64-yard field goals, were stupid, whatever. You're like, he's a rookie head coach. I'm not. And then this game was just a fiasco. I mean, everything you can get wrong, every single box you could check for a sloppy football team, a poorly coached football team, they were checking it twice. I mean, they had to call a timeout once because they didn't have a returner back for a punt. They took the delay game on a field goal attempt and had a punt. And why are we not letting Brandon McManus kick a 59-yard field goal in the thin air when you thought 64 yards was totally fine for Brandon and sea level in Seattle? I don't even get what's going on there. And that came after they tried an like a jet sweep with a tight end, yeah. Anthony Beck. Yeah, like, man. This, and you know, and the problem, what are the kind of under, like, these are all like burning timeout. They have burned all their timeouts with like 9 minutes left in the fourth quarter. And the fans, I've never seen this, Charles, and I know you haven't either because we talked about it.
This is great.
Fans are like, they're so upset and so frustrated. This, they were calling, like, they were counting down the play clock. Like, it just this mocking, like, Bronx cheer type of deal where, yep, they're like, we're so sick of watching you guys get delays of games here. We're going to count it down from 10 when it gets down there. It was totally this passive-aggressive thing for the Broncos fans. They're salty about this thing. Broncos fans are on a ledge, man. They are totally freaking out. I can tell you that right now. And it's just, I mean, some of the things that Hackett has screwed up, and look, it's two games in. He might get better. I'm not saying he won't, but a lot of it is just stuff that you don't really think about a lot, is getting plays in on time.
Yeah.
Like one of the, if you go back and watch the Javonte Williams fumble against Seattle, they fumbled at the goal line. Well, one of the reasons they fumbled at the goal line was the play came in so late. They're scrambling. They got to snap it right at the Seattle could get the jump off the ball because they know it's got to be snapped before a delay game. That's one of the main reasons Javonte Williams fumbled that play. And that just kept happening in this game where you just wonder, is this job too big for Nathaniel Hackett? I hate to say that. It sounds like so overreactionary after two games. But here's a guy who's calling plays. He's trying to do it all. And either you think this stuff through really quick. When you're that play clock goes fast. You got to know your decision. Here's your play call. Let's go. It's into the quarterback. He can go up to the line. Things are coming in late. They're just sloppy. It's almost like they're unprepared, and it's been a fiasco. It has been an utter fiasco through two games for Nathaniel Hackett, and I can tell you right now, he's got a hole. It's so weird to talk about this after two games, but he's got such a big hole to dig out of right now with the Broncos fans. Like, they have already given up on him, and I get it. They're fans, whatever. If they win three in a row or whatever, nobody's going to remember these first two games. But people are out on Nathaniel Hackett already after two games. Like, he has this reputation already as just this guy who doesn't know what the heck he's doing. And he deserves a lot of this because there's just simple things that they're getting wrong. Two straight games now.
All right.
You're not wrong about any of them. It was just one thing after another, Charles.
You're not wrong. I will go back to my comments last week and say, first off, it's a jaded fan base from the Vic Fangio experience, the Vance Joseph experience. It is a very jaded fan base right now, okay? Mm-hmm. It's about as jaded as, you know, you and I, we go into New York, we go into Philly, we go into Chicago, we go into these places that are notoriously known for being, you know, they'll throw you out real fast. That's how Denver feels right now, okay? So they're super jaded. There's hangover from that. I do think that they have been quick on this one because of how bad it has been before. Now, that's fine. I get it. I totally understand it. I made a promise to myself, particularly coming into this season, especially after talking to some guys who had been fired, not to kill rookie head coaches after the first couple of games or rookie GMs after 1 year, one draft, one free agent signing, because I talked to some people, you get to realize they've worked their entire lives to get these opportunities and how unfair it is for people just to destroy them.
No, that's true.
After a very, very small time frame. Okay, this is two games. Now, he's got to understand that he has done some things that are dumb. Okay, like he has. Like, there's just the sweep in that moment, and then on top of that, to have the delay of game right after. I mean, it was a horrible sequence. And then, as you said, I've never heard where it's like a college basketball or NBA game where you got 10, 9, 8. So I couldn't believe, I'm hearing it on my TV. I'm like, oh my God, that's wild.
So sarcastic and all. Like, the Broncos fans are fed up, dude.
Rough. Now, how I'm processing this is looking at a guy who was an OC with a quarterback in Green Bay who, if anything, he was upset when they sent plays in. If anything, he was... I mean, Aaron Rodgers was the one designing a lot of the stuff that went on in Green Bay. Aaron Rodgers was the one who convinced the OC and the head coach to actually run the same play twice if it was successful. Aaron Rodgers was the guy who made personnel decisions on the field. Don't trust that guy. Do trust that guy. He was the one who would yell at coaches if they weren't getting the play in fast enough. Like, there's just a lot there. And now I think he has a guy with Russell Wilson. Look, man. Simple reality is Russ ain't going to be yelling at Yeah. Nathaniel Hackett, right, you know, right. Gotta get the play in. He's not gonna rip ass like that, okay? He's right. not gonna he's be not ripping dude, up yeah. players. He's just not, okay? Now he's doesn't mean he's not a great receiver or quarterback, all these things. I get it. I just want to see a larger sample size than
I get
two
that.
Games.
I get that. But that's, it's just
that's it. There's but just, it is bad.
Yeah, right now. I mean, right now, like and I everything he says is true, but it's I think it's the it's these obvious organizational things that are so bad right now that I mean, yes, you're going to learn. You're going to get better at that. And you're going to figure out, okay.
You got to be able to get the play in.
You got
to
get the play.
Like, seriously, you got to get the play.
You can't be, you know, you can't be making up your mind on a field goal and have it take so long that you get a delay game on a field goal. And your special teams coach has to know there's no returner out there. Like, what are we doing? Like, these are things that, I mean, there's very imperceptible. We rip these guys a lot, fans, us even, rip these guys a lot without knowing the complexity of play calls and whatever. But there's some things that are just obvious. Like, these are obvious mistakes you cannot make as an NFL head coach. And I think that's what makes people the most upset, because they're sitting up there in the stands like, dude, how could you get a delay game on a field goal? Like, how? Like, that is just inexcusable. And it's not to say he can't get better, and he might. And the Broncos are probably going to be a good team. I don't – look, Russell was awful today. He was really, really bad for most of that game. But he'll be fine, I think. I mean, the Broncos are dealing with a lot of injuries now. Jerry Jeudy left this game. Sertan was out. They have a few guys right. out. So there's a little bit of a – there's a lot of adversity here for the Broncos right now. They're pretty lucky they played the Texans today. I don't think they would have beat many teams. But, I'm with you. I get it. You have to wait. You have to be patient. But, man, has it been bad through 2 weeks.
Before you swing into the next one, Cortland Sutton was in, guys. I just want to let you know. He was in on that touchdown.
Yeah, right.
Like, that was blown. They completely blew it.
I don't
like,
know. Yeah, I was looking up, and all of a sudden I was like, oh, okay, that's a touchdown. I was watching another game, and then Denver's running plays again. I'm like,
I watched the replays of it, and there's no way you can prove to me in any of those angles that his toe was touching the white line.
No,
there was nothing. Like, it might have been butted up to it, but he was – it was crazy that got overturned.
I agree. Let's swing it to the next game here. Because, the NFL's been crazy through 2 weeks, Charles. And this was one of the crazier games. Cardinals 29, Raiders 23. I had kind of given up on this game. Like, Kyler looked terrible. The Cardinals' defense was awful. And I was just kind of halfway watching it. It was on.
Come on, you were firing Cliff, man. Come on.
I was firing Cliff. I was firing him in the second quarter. Because it was just like, Kyler looked like he didn't care. Cliff is out there doing whatever. They're going to get blown out by the Raiders. I just checked out in that game. And then it was almost like, wait, the Cardinals are actually like have the ball. They could tie this. Like it just kind of snuck up on me, even though I was watching it. They come all the way back. Awful loss for the Raiders. Awful. They are 0-2 now. And that is an awful loss. I mean, Davante Adams was just a ghost in this game. They started going away from Waller when that was working early. Just a bad, bad loss for the Raiders to lose this. And then the way they lose it, they're getting into field goal range. Hunter Renfrow gets blown up. Scoop and score, Byron Murphy, who I think he flipped the ball too soon. I do. I don't know.
It looked like it.
And none of the broadcast was like, what are they reviewing? We're not sure. Like, I was like, oh, my God, he pulled the DeSean Jackson. I think that they just wanted to get out. I don't think they wanted to open that can of beans. They're just like, yeah, touchdown, sure, it's close. I really do think he dropped it early. But, yeah, what do you think here? I mean, is this more of a – are the Cardinals alive? Was that just the Raiders blowing this? I don't know what to make of this game. It was just,
a weird one.
It was a really, really weird one.
I guess for me, first off with the Cardinals, like in moments, there are times where Kyler Murray is – I don't even know how to describe them sometimes. And there are times, and you know, it's funny because it's in the same game. I'm watching the same game you are.
Yeah.
And there was, especially early on, I'm like, oh my God, like Cliff's going to end up getting fired. Like this is just, this whole thing, they're already like flushed after like two games. And
they look, you know, but then they're in the first half. Terrible.
I thought to myself, I'm like, it's really clear. And it might not be the greatest thing in the world, but it's really clear he misses DeAndre Hopkins. Okay. There's no doubt. Hollywood Brown, by the way, one of the best catches you'll ever see, ever. One-handed, under a defender. I mean, and as you said, it's a weird game. A lot of different things happen. But the two-point conversion where he runs 85
yards. Oh, my goodness. He could do that. Like,
it's not a joke, by the way. He ran 85
yards. 85
yards.
Next-gen stats. One of the crazier plays you're ever going to see. And he can do that. Like, he's got – it's just the play-to-play stuff that sometimes –
play-to-play.
But then it's like you watch that first half. You're like, oh, my God, Kyler's terrible. Cliff's going to get fired. fire. This whole thing is bad. And then Kyler just plays out of his mind for a half. You're like, why can't that guy show up for four quarters every time? Sometimes you wonder. I mean, the Cardinals were 0-2 coming out of this game, getting blown out by the Raiders. Like, I don't know that there's a whole lot of optimism going forward for them, but 1-1, you're just fine. You feel pretty good about pulling that win out of your hat. And then, like I said, the Raiders, man, you're in a tough AFC West, and now you're 0-2, and you just blew a game. I don't know how you bounce back from that. And, like, I mean, and some of the stuff, the Josh McDaniels stuff of, hey, where's Devontae Adams? How do you blow this lead without your best player being involved, without Darren Waller being really involved for the second half? Like, it just fell apart for the Raiders so quickly in this game.
I'm worried with the Raiders. What I envisioned for them was very, you know, they've got these great mismatches with Waller and Devontae Adams. I don't, you know, game-to-game consistency is going to be part of, if the Raiders are going to be a great team, they have to be able to use those mismatches, and frankly, both of them, every single game out, okay, or pretty close to it, and it's been uneven. You know, Adams is great, then this game, it's like you look in at him and you're like, even if you're just box score scouting, you can look at the box score and go, oh my God, like, that clearly didn't have a good game. They lack consistency right now. I still think part of that is the offensive line. I really do. Mm-hmm. You know, some of the obvious things that we were worried about with the Raiders, I think still exist. I do think that they can be okay. There's just more work to do there. You know, I didn't think it was a total reboot. I still don't think it's a total reboot, but there's an element of consistency they don't have yet. And I keep going back to the lack of playing any starters in the preseason and not giving these guys reps together and stuff. I don't care what anybody says. I get the injury stuff, but you're going to go through a couple of games to start seasons where it's not going to look great. I think you could argue that about almost every team in the NFL has had moments where we're like, what the hell is going on here? And, you know, part of me wonders if that's the Raiders. I don't know how to put my finger in the Cardinals right now. I have no clue.
I don't either, because for six quarters, they've looked absolutely awful.
Horrible.
But they're 1-1 because they played one really good half. And, I mean, they came up with so many big plays, especially on that last drive to, you know, to tie the game at the end of regulation. That, I mean, hats off. You're figuring things out. You're at least 1-1, not 0-2. But, yeah, I got no idea what to make of the Cardinals at this point.
All right, let's roll through the rest of these quickly. I definitely got my thoughts on a couple of these based on previous opinions I had that are changing. The Dallas Cowboys, hey, they bounced back. They beat the Cincinnati Bengals 20-17. Awesome. The Cowboys got a kicker that maybe they can trust, which I know is pretty valuable inside that franchise. Cooper Rush is going to be an interesting story. If he has some sustained success, this is just the kind of fan base where I could see people creating arguments about the quarterback. Listen, I don't think that's real. I just think it's funny sometimes to watch the Dallas fan base drive itself crazy over stuff like this. I think CeeDee Lamb's going to be fine. But again, this one, I walked away from the Bengals just being like, I think people are like, are they okay? And I don't know. Like,
really ugly losses to start the season.
Two ugly losses.
I think they're favored by 7 or more in both games. I know they're favored by 7.5 today. And you lose both. One of them, you're -5 in turnover percentage.
And they didn't look like the better team in either.
No,
they didn't.
No, they were never the better team in this game. And what was really telling to me, they get the ball back. They forced the Cowboys to punt right after they tied the game, forced Cowboys to punt. You get the ball back. Yeah, you're deep in your own territory. But you got Joe Burrow, Chase, Higgins, Boyd, Mixon, all these guys. And now you got about 220 to go, and you go 3-and-out. Like, that was like, wow, the Bengals are broken right now. They really need to reset this thing. I mean, I'm not saying their season's over or anything, but I mean, that's not who the Bengals were last year.
No,
to go 3-and-out with a game on the line like that, mm-mm. And it was just, Cowboys defense played great. Micah Parsons, unbelievable. Micah Parsons is going to win defense player of the year. Like, he is awesome. He is just playing out of his mind right now. The defense kept them in that game. And I'll tell you what, if the Cowboys can get this out of Cooper Rush every game, they'd sign up for it right now. He wasn't great by any means, but there were ups and downs in that offense. But the totality of this game for Cooper Rush is pretty good. I mean, that's fine. If I'm sure if you said to Mike McCarthy, that's what you're going to get out of Cooper Rush every game until Dak comes back, you'd say, please sign me up for that, because we can win games. With that defense, with that running game, they can win games. If Cooper Rush plays like he did, very kind of within himself, made a few plays, didn't make any real big mistakes. I thought he played well. I really did. And this one was huge for the Cowboys. After being told all season, all week, that their season's over, they're just, oh my God, they're not going to win another game until Dak comes back. All this, the sky was falling. For them to get this win was pretty big for them. And it is a bad loss for Cincinnati, who really, they need to start with, you don't want to go 0-3, 0-4 in this AFC. Your season can get away from you pretty quickly.
By the way, Tony Pollard, we're not going to be able to argue much longer if he gets opportunities. We're not going to be able to argue much longer whether or not he's their best running back. Like, it's just,
he's really good.
Yeah. Zeke played good in the opener, and Zeke definitely blocks well. And, you know, I don't know. Again, when he gets opportunities and he has a game like this, you see the gear, and it's just like a totally different situation. The one thing, too, before I move on real quick, Burrow's been sacked 13 times in two games. Like, are we going back to this?
Yeah.
And by the way, Joe Mixon, like, I think part of the offense's problem right now is that when they were really, really doing well and they got into that vibe last year, Mixon was running it really well. They were kind of dedicated to it. I don't know if, like, part of me thinks, like, did they get too cute and into this idea of just, you know, Burrow being that guy that was out there and you driving the entire offense through him all the time? Because we forget they were a really good run team last year with Mixon during stretches, that significant stretches. That has not been the case the first 2 weeks, and he's getting sacked 13 times. Offensively, something's off there.
Yeah, it really.
Part of it,
we talked about this last week, Burrow holds the ball too long. He does. He tries to make something out of every single play, and I love him for it, and I love watching him. He's a competitor. It's great, but that's a big reason he has 13 sacks. It's not just the offensive line. We can't just, when you see a guy get sacked that often, yeah, the offensive line sometimes is giving up some sacks, and sometimes it's a quarterback holding the ball too long. There's a reason. Peyton Manning and Tom Brady always had the lowest sack rate in the league. It's not because they just played with great offensive lines every year. Let's swing it to the next game. And this one, look, I thought the Jaguars were going to win once Pittman gets ruled out, because he's so important to what they do. They don't have much else behind him. But the Jaguars beating them, the Colts 24-0, like, Matt Ryan looked terrible in this game. Like, if we reach the cliff with Matt Ryan, I mean, I know that he had nobody to throw to. Their leading receiver today, honest to goodness, Charles, I don't know who it is. I looked at the name and I'm like, I don't recognize this name at all. And he's our leading receiver today. What?
Ashton Doolin?
Yeah, I can't tell you a thing about that guy. I'm sorry. I should. But that's how deep we're going with the Colts right now. And they were terrible in this game. Trevor Lawrence was good. He's had two great games. And they're both against the Colts somehow. But I thought Trevor bounced back really well after last week when he was uneven, and I criticized him here last week. He bounced back. He played really, really well, made some big-time throws off platform, all that kind of stuff. So the Jaguars were pretty good in this game, and the Colts were just, are the Colts good? Like, where are we at on the Colts right now? Is this just, hey, they had some injuries. Shaq Leonard was out. Michael Pittman, they had no receivers after Michael Pittman, so that was a big, big loss for them. Is it just injuries and a bad day, or are the Colts bad?
Well, first off, Doolin went to Malone University, just so you know.
Oh.
And he's actually been in the league for a few years.
I can't believe you're searching this Wikipedia pages on Barack and Charles. You did not. You were acting like you knew this off the top of your head. Like, let me tell you something about this guy as you read his Wikipedia page on your phone.
Look, this game, I don't want to say my guy in Atlanta lied to me about Matt Ryan, but I don't know, man. He doesn't have the juice that I was led to believe was still there. And if anything, this game reminded me of when I saw Philip Rivers start to make some of the mistakes he was making with the Chargers when he was with Indianapolis. And I told Therese, I'm like, I don't think so, man. Like, I think he's that guy. I'm looking at Matt Ryan, and that's kind of how I feel now. He's that guy. This is the end. We're in the death rattle here in terms of his career, and we're going to see days like this, and that he, you know, probably going to end up being a 1-to-1 touchdown to interception guy by the time the season's over.
It could be.
I mean, like you said, that you look at the skill position pieces around him, particularly the wide receiver depth chart after Pittman. I mean, they have a lot of work to do there.
Yeah.
So again, I don't want to go crazy after two games.
Well, let me just ask you straight up, who wins the AFC South? It's still the Colts? I picked the Colts, and that was one of my easier picks. So we talked right before the season, did our picks. It was like Colts. Yeah, it's obviously going to be Colts. Are they still the pick to win this division, or do we have to go in a different direction here?
I want to see some more of the Jaguars. Here's the thing about the Jaguars, and I've said this on a previous show. When I watched them in the preseason, their front was excellent. I thought this was a game where I'm like, that is the front that I saw in the preseason. And if defensively they play like this up front, by the way, Trevor Lawrence for a large portion of this game, it was like, when did he throw an incompletion?
Oh,
like
it felt dealing, like he went a man. He
long stretch
dealing without, in this game. Christian Kirk has been a great signing for them.
They're getting stuff out of Kirk. They paid
James
the guy
Robinson, like James Robinson producing. And Achilles. Like he's like Cam Akers, but he's good. Like, it's like James Robinson blew his Achilles like 9 months ago when he's playing like this. Like, a lot of things look pretty good for the Jaguars right now. I can't lie. And I'm worried about the Colts, man. I am. I don't want to be after two games. And I do say, okay, they had injuries. They're going to get, I mean, Shaq Leonard's one of the best defensive players in football. And Michael Pittman's a great number one receiver. And even Alec
Those
Pierce
are two
was out.
Huge players.
Yeah. So, like, I don't want to go crazy on this, but. Man, I don't know. The Colts worry me. I need to see the Colts play a heck. And they get the Chiefs next week. Okay, like you're probably 0-2-1 at that point. I don't know, man. It's definitely worrisome the way the Colts have played for most of this season, other than pretty much the fourth quarter against Houston.
All right, swing it to Jets Browns. The Jets win 31-30 in a game that
bad.
They had absolutely no. There was no. None. They no business winning this game whatsoever at all. Like it was over. The Browns had this thing won. The Jets come back late. Joe Flacco throws for 307 yards, 4 touchdowns in this game. Garrett Wilson shows you why. I'm not going to put a ton into Browns games because look, the quarterback who they're paying a gazillion dollars there is not playing right now. So to me, I'm just like, whatever happens, unless they rip off 5 or 6 wins in a row, it's kind of meaningless to me until they have the complete package that is supposed to be there with Deshaun Watson. So I'm going to focus on the Jets here. Garrett Wilson, when Joe Douglas was not able to acquire Tyreek Hill, he tried. He was not able to acquire A.J. Brown. He tried. Made a call on Deebo Samuel. Okay, like it was all these things. So finally, behind door number like 5, he loved Garrett Wilson. They thought about taking him with the 4th overall pick in the draft. They end up getting him at what, 10?
I think he got 10. 10. It was 10.
You know, I'm just telling you, he really truly thought this is the best wide receiver in the draft. And he's a player that Joe Douglas thought he eventually could be like one of these guys. He could eventually be an AJ Brown. He could eventually be, but thought also, I think he can come in right away and help us out immediately. He was fantastic in this game. He looked
really
amazing.
Good. Really good.
If they can just make sure they nurse Zach Wilson to the point of full health, that is definitely a guy that Zach Wilson should be able to prosper with. But part of me also is like, Joe Flacco was adequate enough in this game where I'm like, if the Jets win some games with Joe Flacco and he's adequate, what the hell are we going to be? Like, there's no way you can have a quarterback debate here. Okay, because Zach Wilson's the guy. Comes back, he's the guy. I don't care what Joe Flacco does. But
the problem is if he comes back and he struggles, everybody's going to be like, the old bones of Joe Flacco were fine in this. That's what happened last year. They played 4 quarterbacks and Zach Wilson was the worst one. It's not just you could say like, oh, Zach's in this terrible situation, all that kind of stuff. Well, Joe Flacco put up 307 today. Like, right.
Okay, so Frank, so what let me ask you this. So then I just want to know that you agree with me here, or else we're just going to have to stop the show right here and never speak again.
Is that a promise? Because hey,
you're like, oh, yeah, load it up.
Whatever you say, I disagree with.
It's not, it would not necessarily be an argument that Joe Flacco is good or even better than Zach Wilson necessarily. Yeah, it's just why the hell can he actually go in and play competently?
Right. It takes away the situation excuse. We can't sit here at the end of the season. Let's say Zach comes back in a week or two, whatever. He plays the rest of the season. He plays kind of like he did last season. You can't get to the end of the season and be like, well, the situation's so bad around him. Who could succeed in that situation? Well, Joe Flacco.
Right. Didn't mean Flacco was good. It just meant Flacco was able to
deal with it. It shines a harsher light on Zach Wilson if he doesn't play well when Joe Flacco does. And no, there's no question at all. Zach Wilson has to play, and Joe Flacco's not taking you anywhere and all this kind of stuff. I do want to say this about the Browns real quick. I mean, I know what you mean about Deshaun, but if you could get the Browns to 6-5 when Deshaun comes back, they're still kind of in there. I just don't see it, man. They're in some trouble. You barely beat the Carolina Panthers, looked terrible today against the New York Giants, and then you lost at home to the New York Jets. Like, I get it was fluky, and they flubbed the onside and all that, but, oh, man. Like, they're in some trouble, and I don't think they're going to win very many games. They got that game against Pittsburgh on Thursday, and it's like, it's two teams really struggling, but I don't know that the Browns can get that 6-5 with Jacoby Brissett. And he played okay today. He really did. I don't know that, if you're barely beating the Panthers, losing to the Jets at home, I don't really know how good
this is. His best case game for me. That's it. Like, to me, like, I'm like, okay, this is, he's, you know, 22 of 27, 229, one touchdown, one interception. He runs around a little bit. And I'm like,
right.
That's kind of the best you're ever going to get out of him. So, you got to be able to, if you can't beat the Jets with him like that, and like you said, they beat the we'll get to the Panthers in a minute. I would be stunned if they're 6-5 with them. Kevin Stefanski did a great job.
Yeah, he did. Let's swing it to the Rams over the Falcons, which was a boring game for a long time, and ended up getting really interesting. Rams win 31-27. That was another game where I'm like, wait, the Falcons are back in this game? Like, they blocked a punt. Got it. I mean, it was kind of weird. And this would have been the leadoff game, maybe, if the Falcons came back and won this. But Jalen Ramsey makes a heck of an interception at the end. Cooper Kupp's awesome. It doesn't matter anymore. He is so good at what he does that you can't cover him. He's incredible football player. And yeah, it ended up being a pretty good win for the Rams, I guess. But they haven't really done much these first two games. Like, they're not impressive yet.
Yeah, I don't, you know, defensively, Ramsey picks that off, okay, at the end, and that's a great interception and everything. But I don't think he's looked great, honestly. Like, he's had miscues in both games. I kind of thought when he picked that off, okay, well, this is going to erase. Some people are going to think he played a good game because he had a key interception, which is a key interception, and it matters. It should matter in the analysis. I just don't think he's had his A game to start the season. I really don't.
Neither are the Rams.
No, I don't think so either. Like, this is not an impressive win for the Rams, especially after you got blown out. Like, you won. Like, that's good that you won. But part of me says, hey, first off, Drake London looks legit as hell.
Yeah, he's good.
Looks like he'd be a good player. But, you know, Arthur Smith, I'm like, maybe we need to start to come around on, like, the team competing for Arthur Smith, because they were way more competitive last year than I thought they should have been. A game like this, I was stunned. Like, at the end, I'm like, oh my God, what's going on? I don't think Marcus Mariota is going to be the guy. Like, what we see is what we see. But it, at least with the Falcons, it makes me feel like they've got some players that they brought onto the roster. They seem to have a mentality to fight, you know, in games. That's good for them. Far more concerned to me with the Rams, because first off, the defense should be hell of a lot better than they're playing right now. And they should have, come on, man, you won the Super Bowl. This is a team you should close the door on. Like, when you're beating the brakes off them, you do it all the way
28-3. I mean,
yeah.
What? It's like,
man, I don't know. I'm worried about, I'm legitimately, I'm lost with the Rams. I can't figure out what the hell's going on and why they're not a more, this game, I thought 44-14, you know, yeah. I'm like, this is, and they come out and they stumble. Yeah. And then all of a sudden they just lulled to sleep and it changed everything. So, all right, let's close this out. We watched, obviously, Sunday night, we watched the Bears. Bears lose to the Packers 27-10. Don't have a lot of thoughts in this game other than I think the Bears are
bad.
This is a bad team, but there's like weird, like, you know, Darnell Mooney, what the hell's going on, man?
Yeah,
like,
I saw somebody tweet out that the Bears receivers have 7 receptions this year. Through two games. Like,
it's crazy.
This is the bet they made, though, in the offseason, where they didn't get Justin Fields any help at all. It's just that's where they are. They're not a very good team. They won in a monsoon, and good for them, but they're not going to be very many wins for the Bears this year. They did run it well. They stuck in the game. I'll give them that. But, oh, my goodness, it's 4th and goal from like the foot yard line, and you were on a shotgun play. Are you serious?
Oh
right
my
now?
God, dude.
Are you serious? Yeah, I was like, what? He's going to do one of those things where he like you know, like really, like Lamar did in the Ravens game, like really quickly, like go up to the line, take the sneak and get it. I was like, you're really snapping it, right? Like, why? It's just dumb. And then the Packers side is just kind of, I have no analysis on this other than they're going to be a team with two good running backs. They're going to ride them. The defense looked good as advertised tonight, finally, after a tough game in Minnesota. I think their defense is going to be pretty good. And that game against the Bucs next week is going to be a really, really fun one. Let's swing it over to the Patriots-Steelers, another game that doesn't need a whole lot of, I mean, the Patriots win 17-14. Really, really dull game. Mitch Trubisky is just not the guy. And I know Mike Tomlin told Jay Glazer or whatever that I'm not starting Kenny Pickett all year. Yeah, right. Okay. Okay, Mike. There's no way. There's no way that Steelers fans are going to live with 17 games like this through Mitch Trubisky. Remember, the Steelers won week one, but barely in overtime after being plus five in turnover margin. This is not a very good Steelers team. And this was, I mean, good win for the Patriots just to not start 0-2, but they still have their offensive issues. So just, it was honestly, you just watching that game and it was just an ugly, ugly game between two teams that are still trying to find themselves.
But here's the thing too, like, go look at the Nelson Aguilar touchdown. That's a toss-up touchdown to me. I'm like, I don't know. They got lucky. Like, I felt like they got lucky in that play. Yeah. And
he made a great play. Aguilar made a great play.
He made a great play.
I know exactly what you mean. Yep.
But it's also a play where you can't count on scoring touchdowns like that. That's going to happen once or twice in a season. You throw that up, it's going to get knocked down or intercepted the rest of the time.
Right.
The thing about this game for me, like, I just, Mac Jones, he's – I don't know. I can't really describe how I feel about how he's playing. Because he had a couple of bad misses in this game. At one point, he missed Hunter Henry, okay? And, I mean, missed him really bad. Like, completely threw it to the wrong shoulder. Should have been a pick six. Like, there's just, like, little weird kind of – it just feels off with him. And I don't know if that's a play-calling thing. I don't know what it's – the Patriots, though, to me, I mean, this very well – I don't think they beat a good Pittsburgh team. Okay. We talked about what happened last week. By the way, they didn't have Watt on the field this game. And Trubisky's subpar, mediocre starting quarterback, sub-mediocre. I don't know, man. I don't feel great. I got to be honest with you. I don't feel great about the Patriots this year off of, and again, it's just two games. I keep going back to the fact that we're just two games in. I don't like to make big assessments like that, but this does feel like it's carried over from the preseason. So, all right, shut it down. The last one, God, man. You know, the Giants, they end up beating the Panthers 19-16. I am sitting here, and after all the stuff that I said about the Panthers, okay, after everything that I said about
you did jump on that
Baker Mayfield. Yeah, I'm just,
dude, NFC South, if I remember right.
I picked them as sort of that surprise. Hey, they're going to surprise and potentially win the NFC South. I don't know, man. I don't like defensively, they should be better than this. I don't know if, like, maybe the Giants are just going to be a better team under Brian Daboll or what, but I will, especially watching Baker, at what point do I start to look at Mayfield and go, maybe he is this guy that we see. Maybe it's, I keep saying it's the line. Cause look, the line did not play well in this game at all. I think the offensive line is still pretty jacked up and trying to figure it out, but I don't feel great. Let me put it that way. This is the second year in a row where I've kind of looked at Carolina and felt optimistic about them, looking at their talent, looking at this, thinking the quarterback's going to play better, thinking the line's going to be better. And this feels a lot like last year for me. And it makes me wonder again about, like, what's going to happen with Matt Rhule, because there's no way David Tepper's going to – I just don't see David Tepper – this is going to snowball really fast, and it's going to be really bad.
Yeah. I mean, if Matt Rhule almost didn't make it to this season, and then you start 0-2 with those two losses where – like you said, the Panthers got talent. Like, it's not a
– they do.
It's not a team with a terrible, terrible roster like the Bears or somebody, or the Falcons or whatever. This team that's got some guys, and they're just – I get it. It's tough. You lost two games by a combined 5 points. It's not easy to fire a coach after that. But I do wonder. Like, I was sitting there thinking today, like, watching that, I'm like, we might get some news pretty soon. Like, honestly, like, David Tepper's got the money to bury a mistake. I know he doesn't want to get out. That contract is probably the only reason Matt Rhule came back for the season. But at some point, he's just got to be like, this ain't my guy. Whatever, I'm rich. I'll be fine. Here's your whatever settlement they're going to reach, whatever. That's cool. But yes, I think Matt Rhule, on a scale of 1 to 10 on the hot seat here, he's probably to like a 9, right? Like, I mean, when you consider the owner, when you consider he's had 2 5-win seasons in a row, and when you consider that they're underachieving now with an 0-2 record, it is really, really bad for him right now. And he definitely does not want to lose next Sunday, because I don't know that he's necessarily making it to October if he does.
You lost to Jacoby Brissett and
Daniel Jones.
Daniel Jones. Oh. Okay. Like, that's who you lost to start the season. You lost to two franchises that are buried in turmoil. One with the quarterback stuff all this offseason, and the Browns. Oh my God. It's like, you know, and then the Giants with just wholesale massive changes, and also coming into the season going, yeah, this is probably going to be our quarterback. Like, we're not picking up the 5th-year option on this guy, and he probably ain't going to be here. That's who you lost to the first two games. Mm-hmm. And like, and you, by the way, the Panthers, you had a healthy, like, you've got a healthy roster pretty much. Like, offensively, you've got your main guys are like there. And this game, I just frustrated watching Baker. It was
very, you're right. That's a great word to put it, because you're just watching him like, why? There's nothing going on in this offense. Nothing. He had like 165 yards on 33 attempts, throwing to DJ Moore and Robbie Anderson and Christian McCaffrey. Like, I mean, come on. Like, this is, yeah, you're right. It's troubling that Baker played like he did today. And he played that way in the first half last week, too. He did get hot in the second, like, you know, late first half and into the second half. But mostly it's been pretty bad for Baker so far. And yeah, it's just a terrible, terrible way for Matt Rhule to start this season.
It's this team. It just pisses me off, because I'm like, there's no way this team should. They should be a better team right now. And I hate like killing Matt Rhule. I hate, you know, you get Fitterer. I mean, cause I see things there where I'm like, they did a good job on this. They did a good job on that. They have this talent. There's no way Tepper's going to put up with this. If this is how this is going to go. So, all right, that's it. We ran late this one, but you know how it goes. The first month of the season, we end up talking a little longer about every team until we figure out who we shouldn't be talking about. Frank, what's going on? What'd you lead winners and losers with again?
It was, what was it again? It was, the Tyreek Hill trade. That's right. It's been a long day, man. There's a lot of football today. No, the Tyreek Hill trade and how it transformed the Dolphins. And I'm really interested to see them going forward, because who knows? I mean, what if Tua's just unlocked a new level? I mean, what if it's, you know, them and the Bills all the way through December in the AFC East, and they have a really, truly fun division race. I'm here for it, man. I think it'd be great. I think it'd be great if Tua kind of stuck it to everybody who doubted him, including his former coach, including the owner who tried to behind the scenes get Tom Brady. And
Owner.
Everybody was ripping Tua, and here he is, who just played it's going to end up being one of the best games of the entire NFL season for a quarterback. I mean, 4-6-9-6. Unbelievable. So hats off to the Dolphins, and I wrote about that in Winners and Losers today.
By the way, I guarantee you in some fantasy leagues, he was on like a bunch of benches.
Oh,
like,
of course. Of benches. And people are just starting to lose the Ravens.
No,
come on.
They're losing their minds. Like, everybody had him benched.
He started like Trey Lance over him.
Right.
Like,
yeah, he did. Yeah, exactly.
Awesome. I love fantasy football.
Oh, man. All right, Frank. I appreciate it. You can get Frank on Twitter at Yahoo Schwab. You can get me at Charles Robinson. Also, our ace producer, Brett Rader, at Brett Rader. Make sure you check out the mothership at Yahoo Sports. And as always, help us keep Therese Paylor's legacy alive. Visit breakingtea.com/Therese for the all juice tea or hoodie. Remember that proceeds from that purchase go to support the Therese A. Paylor Scholarship at Howard University. You can also support that directly or the scholarship in Therese's name at Power Mizzou if you check out our podcast description. Please give us some 5-star reviews. Tell a friend. Spread the word. Keep the show going. We're going to come back, obviously, this week, Wednesday. We've got back in the regular flow, Sunday, Wednesday flow. Check out Wednesday's show. Very interesting. Some big things happening. Definitely looking forward to the Wednesday show. We're going to have maybe some introductions on Wednesday. So if you like the pod, you're going to get to know, hopefully, some new people. So look forward to that. Talk to you then. Peace.